Hi, I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts for Vermont Edition. I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Let's check in with newly sworn in Senator Peter Welch. It's been a busy couple of weeks in D.C., and we're going to hear what's been going on. I spoke to him yesterday via Zoom, and the conversation starts with me asking him what it was like to be sworn in and officially step into the role that had been previously held by his friend and colleague, Patrick Leahy, for nearly half a century.
Well, pretty overwhelming, very much in a personal sense. You know, the first campaign I worked on in Vermont was in 1974 when I was a volunteer on the beginning of Patrick Leahy's career. And I've known Patrick and Marcel the entire time he's been in the Senate, of course, served with him when I was in the House. And it is just an incredible contribution he's made. And then fast forward 48 years later, and Patrick himself was so gracious and walked me down the Senate aisle so that I could take the oath of office to replace the person whose first campaign I worked on 48 years ago.
So it's such a wild experience of how things just kind of come full circle, I guess, at times.
Well, it is. And of course, you know, nobody can replace Senator Leahy, chair of the Appropriations Committee. He's provided such extraordinary service to the state and to the nation. But my goal is to adhere to his good advice. Keep your word, work cooperatively with others, and stand up for democracy. And I believe that I'm in a position to try to carry on that tradition that we've been so fortunate to have here in Vermont.
Now, your colleagues in the House had quite a different time being sworn in, taking an historic 15 votes before Republican Kevin McCarthy was elected House Speaker. And his taking over that role came with a slew of rule changes for the House. Given your long tenure in the chamber, what do you make of the turbulent time and these rule changes?
It's pretty ominous for how the House will operate in the next 2 years. Essentially, what happens in that razor-thin Republican margin, a faction of the Republicans, the most extreme wing of the Republican Party, extracted enormous concessions. And what they foreshadowed was their intention to use what I think are very extreme tactics, like shutting government down, like having our nation default on its obligations, and use them as tactics to try to get their way, to do things like reduce Social Security benefits, to cut Medicare benefits. So this foretells that we're going to have some significant battles ahead.
Now, you tweeted on Sunday a list of what's in and what's out in 2023. And at the top of your list, above supporting dairy farmers and above insulin price caps, you list green energy investments. What specifically would you want to see accomplished over the next year to say, yes, I, as senator, achieved success on that issue in 2023?
Well, it's about implementation right now. You know, in the Inflation Reduction Act, we had over $500 billion that's going to be allocated to climate change initiatives. And my view is that the administration, with Congress really doing oversight, we have to make certain that that money is deployed in a very effective way. And then I'm going to give an example. These incentives are resulting in a $2 billion solar installation factory being built in Georgia. And that's 2,500 jobs. So our focus now has to be to make certain that that money that we allocated for infrastructure and for climate is well utilized. If we're effective, then we can begin that transition. And people will see, including folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia, of all people, that this really works.
Now, last week, you met with dairy farmers in St. Albans to discuss the needs of Vermont's dairy farmers, both convention and organic. Many of those needs will be addressed in a massive piece of legislation known as the Farm Bill, which is updated every 5 years. What do you see as the biggest priorities for the Farm Bill this year to meet the needs of Vermont's farmers and agriculture industry?
Number one, we have to make certain that local agriculture in Vermont and around the country is given a priority, much more so than it has been to the benefit of corporate agriculture. We have local agriculture. Dairy is a big part of it, of course, here in Vermont. That's good for the local environment. Second, we have to make our agricultural sector, our farmers, partners in our effort to reduce carbon emissions. And the only way we're going to do that is by helping them with money too, to have agricultural practices that reduce carbon emissions. And third, nutrition is an extraordinarily important part of the Farm Bill. I was in St. Albans and saw their food program, and it's so beneficial to the kids, their future, their ability to learn. So those are the three big elements: sustainability, environmental protection, and nutrition.
And then what are you hearing as what farmers need from you as you represent them in the Senate and in D.C.?
Stability is the big thing. You know, they are in a very tough industry where there are wild price swings, and that's especially tough on small farmers. So the Dairy Margin Protection Program that has provided some price stability has been very, very important and a mainstay. So price stability, so that they can count on the ability to pay their bills, is what they're saying is the most important.
The Farm Bill also includes provisions around supplemental food programs like SNAP, sometimes called food stamps. Nationally, we're seeing record high inflation, and according to a study from the University of Vermont and the University of Maine, 2 in 5 Vermonters are struggling to put enough food on the table. What needs to happen in the Farm Bill to make sure that Vermonters and other Americans in need can get the food that they need?
Well, there's two things. One, it's about appropriations and money that's allocated to the nutrition programs. And Vermont has a very good, solid a food program, but we've got to make certain that we continue to fund it. Second, the farm-to-school programs have been extremely beneficial. It means that kids are eating locally produced food, and it means local farmers are getting financial benefit. And I saw the example of that up in St. Albans. So those farm to school programs, in my view, they should be expanded because it's good for kids and their nutrition needs, and it's good for our local farmers.
Are there enough local farmers to keep up with the demand of a school of expanding these programs?
Well, the more there's a market for local farmers, the more local farmers we're going to have. What I'm seeing is young people would love to be able to go into agriculture. And the cost of land is tough, and we've got to work on that. But they need a local market in order to be able to have confidence they can sell their products.
Now, the House has already passed a number of bills that will come to the Senate, including efforts to cut billions in the funding the last Congress pledged to expand, like the IRS and its workforce. That bill is coming to the Senate. What do you make of it?
It's dead on arrival. Why you would not allow the IRS to have the people that it needs, and these are public servants, to answer your call, where's my tax return, or answer this question about my taxes. People can't get their phone calls answered, and that's because we've been defunding the IRS. Secondly, we're losing about $400 billion from tax compliance owed by very, very wealthy Americans. And the reason? We don't have auditors to take a look at their taxes. So I think it's very important that we have an IRS that has a capacity to answer citizen questions and also to audit the taxes that have skated by from folks who are billionaires.
Last week, we had Representative Congresswoman Becca Ballen on our show, and we asked her about the classified documents that President Biden has turned over that were found in his possession as a private citizen. And we know what's happening with Donald Trump, similar thing with classified documents being found at his office at a private residence. What do you make of that, and how do you talk about this to the American people?
Well, here's what's similar. Classified documents in each case were in places they shouldn't have been. That's where the similarities end. But the special investigator, the special prosecutor, has been appointed both in the Biden case and in the Trump case. So they'll be able to give us a full report. What we also do know is, of course, the Biden administration self-reported. And of course, Trump resisted and has stood in the way of the investigation. But I do believe it's right to have a special prosecutor in each case, and let's get that report, and then we can all come to our own conclusions.
And then last thing I want to talk to you about this conversation is your priorities when it comes to fighting the opioid epidemic. This is something you've been fighting to help Vermonters for years. Some might remember the Wheels and Waves Recovery Program, which used congressional funds that you helped bring to the state. And according to healthcare professionals, kept patients in treatment longer. Looking at this session and beyond, how are you going to continue to help Vermonters fight this opioid epidemic?
Well, there's so much heartache for families and individuals because of the opioid epidemic in Vermont and around the country. And this is an area where there's been consistent bipartisan cooperation in the Congress. I will continue to work with my colleagues. Our job in D.C. primarily is to get funds and resources back to our healthcare providers. And the hard work, the really hard work, is done right here in Vermont with our providers, working with folks who are ready to try to address the incredibly powerful addiction that comes with opioid dependence. So I'll continue to work with my colleagues and continue to support our Vermont providers and those Vermonters who are trying to get rid of this incredible addiction that's so tough on families.
Senator Welch, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Connor. Bye-bye.